morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Jors. We're talking some Packers football. We're talking about the NFL schedule that was released yesterday. And of course, we're now less than a week away from the NFL draft. We don't intend to be insensitive to the events going on in Boston this morning. Understand totally if you have to watch that coverage. Let us be your escape, if you will, this morning. But to get ready for the NFL draft, we have a guest joining us on the phone this morning. We have Eric Galco of Optimum Scouting, who's going to clue us into some NFL draft prospects. Eric, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's a busy time of year, as you probably imagine, for myself, about a week or so left until I'm rendered irrelevant for a few months, so I'm going to make as much as I can.
Well, tell us a little bit about Optimum Scouting. Tell us about the its beginnings, the site, and anything you want to clue us into what's going on online.
Yeah, we've been around for about 6 years now. Obviously, a lot of our focus for OptimumScouting.com is on the fans and providing NFL draft content. Really all year long, from our preseason NFL draft guide in mid-August to now our current NFL draft guide, which you can get on the Optimum Scouting homepage at OptimumScouting.com. It's only $5.99 for 200-plus scouting reports and 400 players ranked. And also for Optimum Scouting, we do a lot of stuff off the internet, scouting for professional teams, sports professionals, all-star games, that variety as well. So we do a lot of stuff on and off the internet as well, and hopefully fans can enjoy our work for NFL draft guide this year with Jeff, like you said, just a couple days away.
Very good. We'll send our listeners and viewers over there. But, you know, something happened over the past 24 hours here, and I want you to help me understand this a little bit better, because I've only followed it on social media, these reports of a trashed hotel room that apparently happened at the NFL Combine, and I think two players were linked to it. Mark Harrison of Rutgers, DeAndre Hopkins of Clemson, both wide receivers. Fill in the blanks for me here, Eric. What happened exactly, and should we be concerned?
Yeah, it's a little bit grotesque as to what was found in the apartment itself. You know, human excrement was found around the apartment. It was overall, quote, trashed, and to the point where they had to charge the NFL and charge security to clean up what was left in the hotel room as well. Now, reports are that DeAndre Hopkins, one of the players implicated, had been out of the room for several hours. It's unclear whether he had done that before he left, or Mark Harrison was there and he was the main culprit, or if neither player was totally involved and someone else, another player, went in there and did that for whatever reason as well. So the details aren't fine-tuned, but my takeaway from this is that, A, the NFL has known who these two players are and has done their own investigations since shortly after it happened. Obviously, right after it happened, the NFL knew about it and they knew which room, which players belonged to that room and had the details immediately. So NFL teams have known this for a while. It had an impact on their grades at all this month that impacted their evaluation of some players back in February, and likely since has either been resolved or impacted their draft board. But, you know, it's hard to say whether this is going to really hurt DeAndre Hopkins or Mark Harrison's draft round grade, because of the fact that it's been so long ago. We're not sure how NFL teams really feel about this. Obviously, they've done their own investigation. We're just hearing about it now, a few days away. And you have to wonder, as far as the news coming out, you know, why is it coming out now as opposed to a few months ago? Obviously, people around the NFL and people have sourced the NFL, they've known this for a while. Why is it coming out just now, and why are there only sparse details in the event right now? So, not playing conspiracy theorists, but if I was an NFL draft fan, I would say put some weight into it to say there's something going on here. But NFL teams know what to do with this. They've addressed the situation. They've talked to both players, both their agents, and I hope they do the same before the draft comes around. But wouldn't make too much out of it, but definitely a unique, not a great and fascinating story for these prospects as well, and hopefully it gets resolved. These players weren't involved and doesn't affect the draft pick at all, because that'd be a horrible way to kind of cap off the biggest interview of your entire life with these two players.
How did it come about? Do you know the outlet that first reported it?
Yes, Yahoo reported it first. They had two unidentified players in the hotel room. It was kind of, you know, quote, hotel gate, as far as who might have done it. And I believe it was Jason Cole at Yahoo who first reported it. And then after that, it kind of went dormant for a while because we didn't know who the two players were. Obviously, Adam Schefter brought it back, I believe, yesterday. I'm not sure what the name of his podcast is going to be, but I believe it was yesterday when Adam Schefter reported it and said that these are the two players implicated in the hotel room. And again, there's details as far as if one or either player was both gone at the time of the incident when it happened, when the hotel staff found it. But it it's definitely just a unique time to release a story, a unique situation. We don't have all the details right now. We don't have the bare minimum of a story since Jason Cole reported it.
Well, tell me a little bit about these two guys as football players, at least. Andre Hopkins, of course, is kind of a highly rated wide receiver out of Clemson. I don't know a whole lot about Mark Harrison. Just tell me a little about him as well.
Yeah, DeAndre Hopkins is a guy who kind of played second fiddle to Sammy Watkins, or at least was supposed to earlier this year for Clemson. Watkins, obviously, a highly touted recruit that's been a playmaker for Clemson. But when he sat out the first four games due to a suspension, DeAndre Hopkins really emerged and showed what I saw in sophomore film is he kind of extends away from his body very well, wins the short area with separation, can get downfield a little bit. It really works well in those mid-range routes and those deep dig routes. A lot of routes you see actually the Packers running. Guys like James Jones working in the middle of the field and working on the outside and getting upfield as well. So I think that's what DeAndre Hopkins can be, is a safe receiver in the NFL, can stay away from his body, can finish catches, and get separation. But not a guy who will be a flashy receiver, at least early out of his career. That's Mark Harrison. He's a bit of the opposite. He's a guy who was very inconsistent throughout his Rutgers career. He had a fantastic sophomore season and really didn't get much done after that as well. Became the second or even third receiver in their own offense by his senior year, and a guy who was really used situationally as a vertical guy, as a guy who would use a fantastic length. He's a 6'3", 200-plus pound wide receiver with fantastic athletic ability, but doesn't have great separation or technique as far as a receiver working right now. So Mark Harrison has the upside to be a Jonathan Baldwin-type rise in the draft process because his ceiling is so high, but he's a very inconsistent player, whereas DeAndre Hopkins Clemson, likely in that late first, early second-round area, is a very polished, defined receiver who can win in the short area, win vertically, and can be an instant starter in the NFL when he comes in the league.
Kind of sticking with the wide receiver talk here, we're based, this is a show based out of Wisconsin, focuses on the Packers. Local beat reporter Bob McGinn on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel wrote an article yesterday kind of focusing on wide receiver Cordarrelle Patterson of Tennessee and brought to light his relatively low Wonderlic score. First of all, tell us a little bit about Cordarrelle Patterson as a wide receiver, and if you want to throw in your own thoughts, what do you think of Wonderlic scores? Are they relevant, and how much stock should we be putting into them?
Yeah, Patterson first, he's a guy who's a fantastic athlete in the short area, wins consistently, can get a lot of yards after catch. This guy sets up his runs very well. He understands how to attack receivers and get separation naturally and uses footwork and overall explosiveness to get separation. However, his lack of route definition is worrisome, especially for a guy who's going to be running a lot of West Coast concepts based on his style of play in the NFL. He needs to be a fairly heady receiver to run those concepts and to get separation in the short area and be on time. And that's what the concern really lies with Cordarrelle Patterson. Does he have the football IQ and development? He only played 1 year at Tennessee, actually 1 year, or 2 years to junior college. So he's really underdeveloped as a receiver. We've seen guys in the past struggle with that transition earlier in their career, both at receiver and not at receiver. I think as far as the Wonderlic score, it doesn't say much. I think it's very inconsistent in telling who has the football IQ, who has the character concerns or mental concerns coming out of it. But, you know, for example, Justin Hunter of Tennessee had a similar score to Cordarrelle Patterson, according to that report as well. I've heard from a lot of people that Justin Hunter is a very intelligent guy and well-spoken, not necessarily maybe book smart as what this test might show him, but he's definitely a high character, high football IQ guy, a hard worker. Whereas Cordarrelle Patterson, who had a very similar score, I feel like some of the opposite, a guy who hasn't been as devoted as a teammate, as a guy who doesn't really have the football IQ to develop quickly in the NFL. So all those things are interrelated. I don't put a lot of value into the Wonderlic score in general because we've seen guys like A.J. Green get a 10 and obviously have NFL success and develop as a receiver quickly. But I do think it has some value in terms of if there's a low score, you check on it, you go through your notes, you talk to a player, and get your own feeling about a guy. So that's what the Wonderlic score could be used for, is kind of a baseline, a checking point, almost like a 40-yard dash time. If a receiver runs a 4.7, but looked like a 4.5 guy on film, you go back and watch film and find out if he's a 4.5 or a 4.7 guy. Same for the Wonderlic score. If a guy scores a 7, 8, 9, 10, and you talk to him and you have no question about his mental makeup or football IQ, then you kind of disregard and say it wasn't really reflective of what he is. So that's what I think for the Wonderlic score. People bash it a lot. It's still used by NFL teams and still collected by NFL teams for a reason. NFL teams can use all the resources available to them. That's why I think the Wonderlic score is still around. It still has some value for NFL teams.
Well, interesting you bring up the 40-yard dash because that's the next thing I'm going to ask you about. In today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, there's an article on Wisconsin center Travis Frederick and kind of how he's being questioned a little bit because he ran a alarmingly slow 40 time of over 5.5 seconds. As Bob McGinn goes on to relate, it's been a long time since a center prospect has run that slow and been drafted. What do you think about Travis Frederick of Wisconsin, and how much stock do you put into a 40 time for an offensive lineman?
You know, not much, especially for a guy like Frederick, who's an interior lineman, who's a guy who wins in the short area as a mauling guy, and wins to the blocker on the inside, and a guy working upfield. Maybe a guy like Jonathan Cooper from North Carolina, for example, maybe his 40 time or guys like that matter a little bit because their value is getting upfield and working at the second and third level, like a pulling guard like Jonathan Cooper is. But as for Frederick, he's a guy who wins in the short area, wins with decisive snaps off the snap, explosive punch, intensity, ability to win as a technician on the interior and position his body to make plays. I'm not a huge Frederick fan. I think he's a guy who could be a capable NFL starter, and there is going to be an elite center like we've seen in the past with guys like Alex Mapp and Mike Pouncey. I think he's more of a third, fourth-round prospect, probably in the third round because you can start immediately in the NFL. That's what he is. He struggled with bigger nose tackles. He struggled with quicker nose tackles, but he gets the job done consistently, and that's why I think his value is in that late second, early third, maybe even late early fourth area, depending on how teams value center. So I wouldn't put too much stock on the 40-yard dash time for most interior linemen. We saw Chance Warmack run a horrible time. We saw Kelsey Frederick run the 5.5s. But for interior linemen who win in the short area and are more mauling guys, it really has no impact at all on the draft grade.
Before we let you go, Eric, I want to pick your brain a little bit on two defensive linemen, probably who could come off the board late in the first round. The Packers have a pick late in the first round. Tell me about Sylvester Williams out of North Carolina and Kawan Short of Purdue. Tell me about these guys. Are they good enough to go late first round? And your thoughts on perhaps could they fit what the Packers do?
Yeah, I'm not sure if Kawan Short is really going to fit in the late first round area. He's a guy who has some motor concerns, a guy who has the natural size you want to tackle. But again, those motor concerns are always concerning for a guy that big. We saw a guy, Alameda Te'amu, from Washington last year, fall in the third round, I believe, to the Pittsburgh Steelers because of the fact that he had some motor questions that didn't really show up all the time this year as well. I think he's more of a second, third round prospect. But again, the value of nose tackles and defensive tackles on the interior, plus the fact that after the second, third round, the defensive tackle class drops off a little bit. We're going to see guys like Kawan Short and Brandon Williams from Missouri Southern State be valued a lot because of the value of nose tackles, and finding a good one is hard to do. As for Sylvester Williams, he's a guy who's very explosive off the snap. I think he's best suited for a zero or a one technique in the NFL because of the ability to get up the snap quickly, get that first butt first, and cause disruption in the short area with multiple offensive linemen. So I think Williams will be somewhere taken in the first round, probably be in the late first round area, maybe as high as the Giants at 19, maybe as low as the 49ers at 31, somewhere in that range he's likely to go. But quick first step, disrupt in the short area. Is any guy who's going to win in the NFL consistently? I'm not sure. It's a three technique. That's a guy who can play the one or the nose tackle, or even the five technique situationally. Could have a lot of value in Sylvester Williams.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us this morning. You're a wealth of knowledge. We appreciate you talking a little bit of NFL draft with us, and we'll let you get back to work as we're now less than a week away.
I appreciate it. It's going to be a busy time right now, but I appreciate having you on.
All right. Thanks a lot. Eric Galco of Optimum Scouting joining us here this morning on Cheesehead TV here at Railbird Central. Thanks to him, and thanks to you, the listener, for joining us here this morning at Cheesehead TV. A lot to talk about. Not only are we less than a week away from the NFL draft here, but yesterday was the NFL schedule release. So I think that's what a lot of people are talking about today. The water cooler talk, kind of focusing on the Packers schedule for this upcoming 2013 season. So I'll kind of go through all the games here and probably, you know, some of the more notable ones, the season opener, the season finale, the holiday games, the primetime games, nationally televised. Those will get a little bit more attention. But, you know, yesterday you find out the season opener is against the San Francisco 49ers. This is the team who the Packers played twice last year, lost to them both times. In fact, They played them in the season opener. Last year, it was at Lambeau Field. This year, it's going to be at San Francisco. And it happened to be at the exact same time slot. We're talking a 3:25 p.m. Central Time kickoff on a Sunday. Going to be the exact same thing. It's just going to be deja vu a little bit on opening day in the NFL for the Packers and the 49ers. So, of course, the Packers are facing the team that eliminated them from the playoffs the previous season, the team that went on to play in the Super Bowl, although the San Francisco 49ers lost. We will see how much better the Packers defense is at stopping the San Francisco 49ers, their read option offense with Colin Kaepernick at quarterback, and just shutting down the 49ers in general after they racked up 579 yards on the Packers last year. So that's a big one right off the bat there. And then in week two, it's also an interesting game because the Packers have their home opener in week two, Washington Redskins. And of course, all eyes will be on the quarterback of the Redskins, Robert Griffin III, RG3, and will he be ready to come back from a knee injury sustained late last season? Seeing as it was occurred late in the year, you kind of wonder, is he going to be ready by the time week two rolls around? Is he going to play? Certainly the Redskins are a much better team with him at the helm than anybody else. So that's could be a big game and kind of an exciting one, I think, for the Packers home opener. So kind of different and really cool, I think. So Then you go to week three. The Packers play at the Cincinnati Bengals. I honestly don't know a whole ton about the Bengals there. They got A.J. Green, the wide receiver, who's very, he'll be somebody to keep an eye on. But, I think what's interesting is it's the game before the Packers bye week, and the Packers bye week this year comes earlier than any other time I can remember in recent memory, before the month of September is even over in week four. Now, I'm not sure when do bye weeks begin in the NFL? Do the Packers have the earliest bye week? They begin either week three or week four. I think the first 2 weeks of the NFL, they go without anybody having a bye, if I'm correct. And then so the Packers have a bye week early, and you kind of sit there, and there's kind of different ways to look at that with the early bye. On one hand, you can sit there and say, okay, this might help the guys who potentially could be on the PUP list, say defensive lineman Jarrell Worthy, who himself suffered a late season injury last year. Whereas if the Packers had a bye late in the year, say in November, it would already be time perhaps to the PUP list waiting period. That window would already be over. And maybe there wouldn't be that extra bye week to rest and recover and still have time to play. So you can look at it in that regard as maybe being helpful, perhaps, in that maybe a PUP list player might get one more game to play in. And then on the other hand, maybe you want the bye week later simply because, you just tend to get injuries accumulate over the course of the season. It happens at mid-year or just past mid-year. You kind of get a nice break before the stretch run. So, you can look at it in that regard as well. So there's different ways to kind of perceive the bye week. And after the bye week, the Packers come back home for their first NFC Central game against the Detroit Lions. So that's in week five. Week six, the Packers go out to Baltimore to play the defending world champions, the Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens. So, just simply playing the Baltimore Ravens will be notable because they're the defending champion. So Week 6, that's what you got there. Week 7, the Packers return home again, play the Cleveland Browns, another AFC North opponent, as the Packers play the entire AFC North this year. They get 3 out of the 4 AFC North teams fairly early in the season, so you know, by weeks 7 here, they're facing the Browns. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, Browns. Week 8, they go and face the Minnesota Vikings. So Sunday, October 27th, first time the Packers will be facing Greg Jennings in a Vikings uniform. So I think that's what a lot of attention will be on there. And that is the Packers' first nationally televised game. That is a Sunday night game on NBC. So there will be a little extra added attention there. Two playoff teams, of course. So, you know, there'll be a lot to talk about that week. And by the way, did you hear last night? This was reported at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel or their online website, JS Online, quarterback Aaron Rodgers at the Wisconsin Sports Awards held last night in Milwaukee kind of made a little joke about Greg Jennings when asked by a reporter, and Aaron Rodgers replies, who's that? It just, you know, again, joking about Greg Jennings and now being a member of the Vikings. So definitely be a lot to talk about that week. Monday, November 4th, the Packers' first Monday night game of the year comes in early November against another NFC North opponent. This time it's at home against the Chicago Bears at Lambeau Field. So another night game, another nationally televised game. This time will be on ESPN, first game on ESPN of the year. So just simply being the longtime rival, of course, that's a game that always gets attention. Then they go back from 2 consecutive night games to Sunday, November 10th, taking on the Philadelphia Eagles at home. So the first back-to-back home games of the year occur when the Packers take on the Eagles. And it's, you know, for what it's worth, while the Packers do have one back-to-back home game, they have 0 back-to-back road games this year. So always kind of back and forth for the most part on their schedule this year. Sunday, November 17th, the Packers visit the New York Giants. That is another nationally televised game. That's at a Sunday night game on NBC. So there they go and face an NFC East team. And then after that, they return home the following Sunday, November 24th, to face the Vikings again. Again, facing Greg Jennings. So that time it's at home. And then the holiday game, on Thursday, November 28th, on Thanksgiving, the Packers play the Detroit Lions, as they've been known to do in recent history. This is like, I think I saw somebody pointed out like 7 times in 13 years, something like that. It just, the NFL happens to schedule a lot of Thanksgiving games between the Packers and the Lions. You know, of course, just being in the same division, they face the Lions twice a year as opposed to almost any other team where they'd only face them once. So, you know, from that standpoint, it's, you know, obviously the Packers would probably show up on Thanksgiving more than your typical team. But still, it's like the NFL has to purposely be doing this for it to happen that often. You know, you kind of have the short turnaround on Thanksgiving, so you can look at it in that regard and be like, do you like playing on Thursday nights with the short Thanksgiving? But of course, that also, you kind of get a mini bye week then after Thanksgiving. So with the Packers playing, getting their bye week so early in the season, perhaps they'll be grateful afterwards for kind of the mini bye, kind of a week and a half layoff a little bit before they get back to action and we begin Sunday or December play, cold weather games. The Packers return home Sunday, December 8th against the Atlanta Falcons, a night game in December. Could be really cold at Lambeau Field, 7:30 p.m. kickoff on NBC. So a matchup of two playoff teams between the Packers and the Falcons. Then they go Sunday, December 15th at Dallas, week 15. So the Packers traveling down to Jerry World in Dallas for a game on Fox, a Sunday afternoon game. Packers' final home game of the year comes in week 16 against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Sunday, December 22nd, an afternoon game on CBS. And so that's the final home game of the year against an AFC North opponent as they wrap up that series there. And then finally, the season finale happens to be on the road this year, Sunday, December 29th. So just a few days before New Year's, wrapping it up with the Chicago Bears. So as they always do, wrap up with a division opponent the last game of the year. At least that's kind of been the NFL's modus operandi the past few seasons to do that for most NFL teams, end with a division opponent, which is a great idea. In fact, I really think they should even be like the last two games of the year against division opponents. Not that it's the worst thing in the world that it's not, but anyway. So wrapping up with the Chicago Bears, and you know, does anybody want to throw like a record prediction out there in our live blog here at Livestream? Feel free if you want to throw out your early prediction right now about what the Packers will do. Of course you want them to go 16-0. Is that realistic? I mean, they almost did it 2 years ago. As long as the Packers have Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews and they're healthy and playing, there's no reason they can't be a playoff team. I don't see that streak ending anytime soon, unless, God forbid, knock on wood here, that Rodgers or Matthews gets injured, is out for a long time or something. But John throws out a guess on the live blog, 11-5, and you know, I would be right in that same kind of range, 11-5. You know, just have to guess right now. Your kind of early knee-jerk reaction about the Packers and how they'll do this season. Yeah, I'd say 11-5. That's going to get them into the playoffs. I hope for better. And certainly, you know, we're only in April right now. I got a lot of time here to see how the offseason plays out and how these draft choices are going to impact the team and things like that, and how the Packers are looking after last year, if they're making any schematic changes, and based upon how the preseason goes and how players look. I mean, we got a lot of time until I could change my mind again in September before the season starts about how they'll do again. So, yeah, we'll see. But, I mean, you know, fairly difficult schedule, I think. A lot of tough games in there, especially I think, you know, gets off to a difficult start right away. You know, the first game of the year going out to San Francisco, that's, you know, just about as hard as it gets. And then coming back and facing potentially RG3 in game two, facing the defending Super Bowl champions, all those things. And you know, facing an NFC North schedule that's, you know, pretty good. One of the better divisions in football. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say the best, but I'd say it's up there, at least currently. So anyway, John says on the live blog, the draft will be key, I believe, how the second and third year players develop as well. So I mean, they all play a part. Every single little factor here we can think of into how the Packers will do in 2013. But, so the schedule released yesterday. We got the NFL draft coming up this week. Be really exciting. In fact, folks, we're going to be having pretty much, I think, here the same format we're going to be using live stream during coverage of the draft. So you can use our live blog, the comment section, to chat as the draft is going along. And then every round, I will be providing instant live analysis and reaction to all the Packers draft choices. So after the Packers draft, after the Packers pick every round, I'll be coming on air and kind of doing, I guess, special editions of Railbird Central. So as soon as the Packers pick their in the first round, number 26, I mean, you'll have to give me a minute or two while we prepare things and get on air. But shortly after the Packers pick, we'll be having a special edition Railbird Central instant analysis and reaction talking about the newest member of the Green Bay Packers, and that'll be happening every single round. So make sure to stick with us for your coverage all week long. I don't think you're going to see this almost anywhere else on TV, on radio. You might get it for the first round in other places, but boy, I'm not sure you're going to find many that's going to do it for all seven rounds like we're going to do here at Cheesehead TV. So, you know, Thursday night, first round, obviously going to be a lot of chatter everywhere about that. But then come back Friday night, round two, as soon as the Packers make a second round selection, we'll be going on air talking about that player. Round three, going to come on air, talk about that player. And even if the Packers trade, we'll be talking about that too. I mean, even if, by chance, what if the Packers trade down in round one and they don't end up with a first round draft choice? Well, we'll still come on air and find out what, you know, discuss what they, you know, what they got in compensation, what they might be looking at in round two, how many picks they're going to have in round two, round three, things like that. So, you know, there's plenty to talk about, even if the Packers don't happen to make a pick in a particular round, or, you know, sometimes they might have more than one pick in a particular round. So, lots to talk about. Even Saturday, round 4, 5, 6, 7, we'll come on air every single time and discuss the newest member of the Packers, how they fit into the Packers scheme, what these players were like in college. So it's going to be really fun. So make sure to come and you know, after every draft choice, just come to Cheesehead TV. Stick with us all weekend long. Just set your browser on Cheesehead TV. You don't even have to go anywhere else. Not that you can't, but what we'll provide is best coverage as we simply and possibly can. So really excited for that next week. But, you know, that's going to wrap it up for this week here on Railbird Central, here on a Friday morning. So we'll be back again, of course, on Monday. I hope to have another NFL draft guest on as we continue to talk about some of these guys and things that happen in regards to the NFL draft. And of course, we thank Eric Gelko of Optimum Scouting for joining us here this morning at Cheesehead TV. So we'll see you later, everyone. On behalf of Jamie Jors, I'm Brian Kirivu, and leave you today with a song called from the infamous String Dusters, "The Place That I Call Home" on Psi Fidelity Records. We'll see you later, everyone. Go Pack. Go.
Place that